there are some lies in our science books. Taught it for 15 years. Even though I'm not teaching it anymore, I still like to study. It's so many neat things to learn. We're going to cover some of that tonight.
Perception is being managed. We are being steered and guided by a hidden hand.
The whole world has been duped by the media that is not real.
Smart thinking, possible time traveler. Smart thinking.
That night, boom, contact memory.
And then, Alex, if you don't agree, you'll be sent to a re-education camp.
Just because I'm old doesn't mean I've lost my touch with the ladies.
A lot of people here tonight felt like they lost. You know why?
Now, experts are suggesting that we're in a golden age of shape-shifting reptilian sightings. Now, why is that?
I was, and still am, a huge conspiracy guy. I literally ran out of new tin hat topics to research.
It was most definitely not capable of melting steel.
Then I would be a crackpot if I thought that was the case.
Welcome to the Hypothetical Institute, a podcast about conspiracies.
My name is Luke.
I'm Salty.
I'm Cam. What are we talking about today, boys?
The Oklahoma City bombing.
Yeah, sort of the third part in a three-part series we've been doing.
Pretty tragic scenario. Yeah. Probably obviously the most tragic in terms of deaths.
Yeah, it was the largest terrorist incident in the United States until 9/11.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, as we've been...
Discounting a lot of the genocide of Native Americans.
Yes, discounting that.
Yeah.
Yeah, as we said in the last two episodes, sort of what began at Ruby Ridge and continued at Waco all sort of set in motion the events that led to Oklahoma City.
Full disclosure before we start, I'm very underprepared, so I'm going to be learning a lot along with the listener.
That's good.
Yeah. Yep.
Thanks for being honest with us.
Yeah.
Before we begin, though, we'd like to thank our top Patreon, Tom.
Tom, thank you.
Thanks, Tom. Keep up the good work.
If you'd like to join Tom on Patreon, of course, you can go to patreon.com/hypothepod, where we are giving out buttons.
Buttons and badges.
Pins, yeah. And yeah, you also get an exclusive news show every week.
Mm. Yeah. That news show is great. That is good content.
Yeah.
All right. So let's get into it. The Oklahoma City bombing. April 19, 1995, 2 years to the day. After the final stand at Waco, a rider truck filled with explosives is driven up to the Alfred P. Murrah Federal Building in Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. At 9:02, the bomb goes off. 168 people die. More than 680 people are injured. A third of the building is destroyed, as well as serious damage to 324 other buildings around the area.
Wow, that's insane.
I think some of the buildings around it were just so badly that they all had to be pulled down.
Yeah, basically. The actual vision of the building after the bombing is fucking horrendous.
Mm.
Like, it's insane.
So that, I think that was a reason why he chose that building. Because it had a big open area in front of it.
Right.
The visuals, like, it was going to have better visuals. It had more impact. So that's part of the reason why he chose it.
Mm. Right. Or was it?
I don't know.
Or did he choose it at all?
Yeah, yeah. That's what I read anyway. We'll find out more about that.
Yeah. And as we know, famously, Robbo's not researched for today, so.
Yeah, this is like it's the one thing that I've got.
So the Oklahoma City bombing plays a large, has a large place in the American conspiratorial right wing. Yes, both as sort of a culmination of a bunch of that thinking. But also, it in itself is a massive conspiracy.
Mm.
And then on top of that, it probably is a real conspiracy involving cover-ups and the investigation and things like that. So I guess we'll get into all of that.
So who is the guy that did it?
So the main perpetrators...
What is the mainstream narrative to this?
All right. So there was a guy called Timothy McVeigh. There was also someone called Terry Nichols. There was James Nichols, Terry's brother. And it was Michael Fortier, who was Timothy McVeigh's army roommate. Timothy McVeigh and Terry Nichols knew each other in the army as well. But basically, Timothy McVeigh was a soldier. He went and fought in the first Gulf War, and he became disillusioned with what they were doing over there. Or maybe he just didn't quite get what he was looking for when he was over there. He talks about there was one sniper shot he took where he, from a very long distance, he killed an Iraqi and didn't really feel anything. I think he wanted to feel something when he killed people.
Right.
But didn't really get that. And he started to question what they were doing there because these were just human beings that they were killing.
I don't. I feel like that.
That's not a philosophy that really carried on later on.
Yeah, he kind of just tossed that one out the window.
Because he ended up going to the military because that's sort of gave him structure and things, right? And
yeah.
A bit of respect. He liked to play with guns.
Yeah, I think it was a combination of wanting, you know, a bit of structure, a bit of respect, and also wanting to play with heaps of guns.
Yeah.
And as he said, the US Army gives you free ammunition.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
I guess they do.
Really? Really? Yeah, they do.
No, but I mean, like, how is that controlled in terms of just free ammunition all the time?
Well, no, you keep shooting the gun, and when you run out, they don't say, oh, you've run out. That's your whole ammunition ration.
Now you have to go down the gun shop and buy yourself some bullets. you just go to the armory.
They just keep giving you bullets, Robbo.
Yeah, right. The army, eh?
Yeah. And I guess he was bullied at school, so bullied... Bad self-esteem, likes guns, wants some control, wants some respect, join the army. That's a bloody great mix for a well-put-together human being, isn't it?
Yeah. So he goes to the army, goes to the Gulf War, realises that shooting Iraqis not for him.
Yeah, he sees the US government as sort of a bully in Iraq. But he comes back and he's given the opportunity to become a Special Forces Ranger.
Okay.
So he's like, look, I don't believe in what the US government is doing, but what if I could do it like the really fucking cool version of what I was doing?
Yeah, yeah.
Better guns, bigger bullets.
Get to wear all black, probably.
Yeah. Learn how to be really quiet while killing people.
Yeah.
So that's pretty good.
He joins Ranger School and he just washes out completely. he's not in peak physical condition. His nickname in school was Noodles McVeigh because he was so tall and skinny.
Yeah.
I don't know, maybe he just didn't have enough muscle mass for Ranger School. But he washes out of Ranger School and then he sort of hangs around the army for a little bit more, like a few months, and then he just gets completely disillusioned. He quits the army, goes back home, to live with his sister.
Right.
He tries to get jobs and things. I don't know where the assumption was that him having been in the army would be like an instant door opener.
Yeah.
Wherever he went.
Hasn't he seen Rambo?
But I feel like that is...
Well, First Blood. Sorry, it's not called Rambo.
The
It's all right. Don't worry about it.
The way they talk about soldiers in like American popular culture is soldiers are the best. They're the greatest. You go away, you become a war hero. We'll always respect them. But how they're actually treated in society is what the hell are you qualified for?
Unless you're watching First Blood or listening to Bruce Springsteen.
Yeah. Yeah. But like, yeah, so I can imagine you might think that, oh, yeah, the world's my oyster. I'm a bloody war hero.
Yeah.
Killed an Iraqi. Come on. And then you can't sit in an office, do a spreadsheet because you never learned how.
Yeah. But you could probably kill someone or a bunch of people.
Yeah.
So he starts... getting more interested in right-wing conspiratorial thinking. He subscribes to a lot of newsletters. He starts going to gun shows. Ruby Ridge, which we talked about 2 weeks ago, he sees that definitely as the, you know, a shot in the war between the government and the United States people.
Mm-hmm.
And then Waco a year later is another shot in that war.
And he rocks up to Waco.
Yeah. He's
selling bumper stickers.
Yeah, there's footage of him at Waco.
What sort of bumpers? Like, just don't tread on me kind of carry on?
Yeah, anti-government.
Yeah. Anti-gun control.
Yeah.
So, yeah, he had one that was like, ban guns. And then underneath it's like, so that only the government has guns.
Hmm.
He did have one sticker that was like about, you know, government overreach or, you know, too much government control. I had a hammer and sickle on one side and a swazzy on the other. I was like, that's not going to make you hugely popular with some of your mates.
Mm. So he's drifting around doing some Waco stuff.
Yeah. So, yeah, Waco really radicalizes him. And he starts planning to get revenge on the US government. So the story is that he and Terry Nichols and Michael Fortier concoct this plan to do something. At first they were talking about killing Lon Horuchi, the sniper from Ruby Ridge and Waco. They also talked about assassinating Janet Reno, the US Attorney General. But eventually they land on this idea of blowing up a building somewhere. And eventually they decide on the Murrah Building in Oklahoma City.
Which had previously been a target of another white supremacist plot at some point.
It had been. So the group... Hang on.
I've got a super long name, super long skinhead name. Oh,
yeah.
The Covenant, the Sword and the Arm of the Lord had plotted to park a van... and blow it up with rockets.
Yes, that is a long name.
Yeah, yeah.
So they were going to have a...
How come they had such a specific event in their name?
The Covenant.
Good gear.
Come on. I'll play. Yeah, so they were plotting to do a similar thing to that building, I think, didn't they?
Yeah, back in the 80s. So their plan was to have... It's weird because the... What they ended up doing is so simple and so effective. Like, let's just put a huge bomb outside the building. The Covenant, the Sword and the Arm of the Lord, their plan was to build a remote-controlled rocket launcher that they could park a van out the front of the building. And then I don't know if there was going to be like a window in the van or something, but they would be able to get out of the van, set off the rocket launcher and would fire rockets into the building.
Okay.
And that would do whatever they wanted to do.
Right.
That's... Look, I don't want to sound insensitive, but that's somewhat kind of cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'd like to see their plan of action. It's like, okay, we want to remote control fire rockets. First step, let's invent a remote control rocket firing system. Yeah. Wait, we're all fucking dumbass white supremacists.
Well, that was their problem.
Right.
Because they're like... We can't buy a rocket launcher because that's going to, you know, raise eyebrows.
Red flags.
So they're like, let's build a rocket launcher. And as you noted, they're all fucking dumb as dog shit. They blew themselves up.
Right.
I think two of them were killed by their own rocket launcher. And so they took that as a sign. Hang on.
We should stop building rocket launchers.
Let's not do this.
Which is a shame because it was proving to be a bit of a success.
Let's change tact and do it another way. Let's just drop the highlight. If we're not doing it with remote-controlled rocket launchers, guys, we're not doing it.
It's very Wile E. Coyote-y. Like, their next plan was then to just draw a fake thing on the side of the building and hope people went into it.
So...
Just draw a tunnel and people just pile their cars up into the side of the building.
So one of those guys was called Richard Snell. And he later went to prison for murder.
Mm-hmm.
He murdered a cop. He got pulled over and he shot the cop that pulled him over. It was a black cop. And then when they searched his car, they found another gun, which they linked to a previous murder, which was a pawnbroker who he believed was Jewish, but was not.
Right.
And so he got the death penalty for that and was sentenced to die on April 19, 1995.
Oh, I remember that date from earlier when you said that date.
So we'll get back to him.
Okay.
Because that is possibly significant.
Okay.
But also that group was one of a number of sort of far right groups that sort of coalesced around a place called Elohim City, which we'll see come up later on as well.
Mm.
But yeah, they decide Timothy McVeigh, Michael Fortier and... Terry Nichols are going to blow up a building. They pick the Murrah Building. Michael Fortier, I think, is the first one to opt out.
Mm.
He comes to realise, oh, wait a second, maybe killing a whole bunch of people is not a great idea. Kerry Nichols, sort of very late in the piece, wants out. I think when they're building the bomb, he decides that he doesn't want to be involved. And the story is that, this is the official narrative, Timothy McVeigh at gunpoint forces him to help him finish off the bomb. But Terry Nichols does not come with him on the day. And then finally, Timothy McVeigh alone drives a Ryder truck full of explosives, full of fertilizer and nitro.
Ryder truck being, that's the company, right? It's like a higher big box truck.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
I think the big yellow trucks.
Yeah, like a rental truck.
Yeah.
That you would get to move your furniture and stuff.
Drives that to the front of the building where he, shortly before he arrives, he lights a fuse and then drives it to the front of the building and gets out, gets into a car, getaway car that he'd left a few days earlier. It was not his preferred getaway car, which had, I think, had been impounded or something had gotten in the way of that. So he'd bought a car for $300. it was a shitty old car. It didn't have any plates on it because he was going to put plates on it later. He drove away.
Do that before you fucking set off a bomb, dude.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway. Get your ducks in a row, is what I'm saying.
He drives off. The bomb goes off. He's arrested 90 minutes later for driving without license plates.
Yeah.
And shortly thereafter, they work out. It doesn't take them long to work it out. They find the vehicle identification number of the truck in the wreckage. They trace it back to Robert Kling, who had rented the truck in another city. And had put down the address of James Nichols as his address. Robert Kling was the name that Timothy McVeigh chose. He'd known a guy called Kling in the army, but also because he was a massive fucking nerd.
Yeah.
And it reminded him of Klingons, which is sort of how he saw himself as like a great warrior. A
Klingon warrior.
Because didn't he also stay in a hotel? Like he used a fake name back far enough to where he stayed one night in a hotel and just signed in as himself?
Yeah.
Oh,
start with a fake name from the beginning.
Someone thought, like, he paused to sign something, and the hotel manager realized that he was pausing or something, like, looking like he was trying to think. So he asked him a question, and then he just signed his usual name automatically. Allegedly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That seems like something that the hotel manager
told
Yeah, I'm the one that cracked the case.
Yeah.
saw that he was faking it. Tricked him out.
Yeah.
He walked in and his shoes were off. I knew immediately.
At this motel where we really care about who's staying here.
Yeah.
I didn't pull him up a lot at the time. I didn't do anything at the time. But after the fact, I knew.
So through James Nichols, they trace it back to Terry Nichols. They trace it back to Timothy McVeigh. They realise they already have him in custody. Although they're about to let him go. And they managed to put a stop to that. And yeah. They go to see him. They say, "Do you know why we're here?" Which is classic little cop trick.
Yeah.
This guy, man, he's fucking so easy to trick, isn't he?
Yeah. He's like, "Oh, it doesn't have anything to do with the bombing, does it?" Yeah. But I don't know. I don't know if he's doing a little trick back.
Yeah.
It was like, "Oh, it doesn't have anything to do with the bombing, does it?" Which is better than saying, "Oh, is it because of the bombing I did?"
Yeah, I suppose.
Only slightly. The best answer is, I have no idea, officer.
Yeah, no idea.
And do I need to speak to a lawyer?
Yeah. The cops should have said to him, "Oh, what did you have to do with that building that fell down?" And to be like, "I didn't bomb the building. We didn't mention a bomb."
Got him. Lawyered.
So, yeah.
Goes to jail. He's banged up.
Yep.
Yeah.
Sentenced to death.
Yep.
Quickest sentence to death. Actually happening ever?
It was pretty quick.
It's pretty quick, right? It wasn't very long.
In terms of, like, you know, these death sentences often get dragged out over time. He does eventually speed things up significantly.
Yeah, right.
Because I think part of his defense, he wanted to do a defense of, like, I was at war with the United States. It was like a casualty of war. I think his defense attorneys wanted to run a different sort of defense. Because he pleads not guilty. But then it's like, all right, we've got you.
Yeah.
Sort of. But we'll see that this is... The circumstantial nature of the case against him is what leads to maybe other people responsible getting off the hook. But when eventually it comes down to he waives a lot of his appeals and things.
Yeah, right.
To sort of speed, which speeds along the process of him being put to death, which he eventually is in 2001. So 6 years later, which is pretty quick.
Yeah.
Yeah. See big guys who are on death row for like 20 years and shit.
That's, I guess the thing is most people on death row are like taking every opportunity they can to not get killed.
Yeah.
So, the actual bomb, how many people were killed?
At least 168.
Okay.
Possibly 169.
Because there's a random leg there.
The extra leg.
There's the extra leg.
So the extra leg points to potentially another victim and potentially another bomber, right?
Yeah, or potentially just one person who was buried with the wrong number of legs.
Because they buried 8 people with missing left legs.
Yeah.
So
and then they buried the leg with the wrong person.
Okay.
Because they thought it belonged to some woman and they were like, oh no, she was already missing a leg or something. There was something weird with the leg.
Yeah.
But did you guys read up on the precedent behind the extra bomber theory with the leg?
No.
From Ireland? Let me just bring you up to speed on the extra bomber's precedent based on the extra leg. It's called the Phantom Penis of Ireland.
Okay.
So there was a bunch of guys who were going to blow something up. They were carrying a bomb into a shed and it exploded. The autopsy found 8 bodies, 9 penises.
Jeez. Okay.
So there were...
I feel like a penis is going to be one of the first things to be eviscerated in an explosion.
Yeah, you would think. Maybe he had a really big one and it was hanging and it just got blown backwards between his legs or something. But anyway, they later discovered that it was likely that the guy holding the bomb is who the extra penis belonged to, and the rest of his body got so massively blown to smithereens.
And just his bloody dinger remains.
Just his dinger on the ground.
Jeez. I mean, I don't want to compliment a bloke that's blowing people up, but strong dinger work.
So yeah, there is a theory that there's a second bomber there besides just McVeigh.
A bit too close to the van.
Yeah, too close to the van. And the leg also had bits of like barrel embedded in it.
Yeah.
Which would suggest it was very close to the van indeed.
I read a theory how it was like maybe the bomber was walking away from the van when it exploded and their leg just happened to pass behind like a parking meter, which shielded it from the blast. Right. It's like, come on.
So...
Getting really, really roadrunner-y.
Yeah.
Terry Nichols went to jail as well.
He didn't get death.
He didn't get death.
But he got like 160 murder charges or something. Yeah.
I don't really believe the thing about him being completely under duress. There's something... I feel like Timothy McVeigh went along with that in his trial. Because I guess he knew he wasn't getting out of it and he wanted to help out his mate. Michael Fortier was released from jail a few years ago, I think in like the mid-2000s. I think he got 20 years. Because he dipped out very early, but not so early that he couldn't have caught the cops.
Yeah.
He talked at his trial about having dreams every night about calling the authorities and stopping it. And then waking up in jail and realizing that he never did it.
Right.
So, kids, if you're listening and you're part of a terrorist scheme.
Yeah.
Tell a teacher.
Yeah. I know that people don't like a narc. In this case.
Yeah, just narc.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Narking isn't black and white.
No.
I guess the victims. So, it was the Alfred P. Murrah Federal Building. 168 or 169 dead. I think something like 90 something were federal government employees, but working for organisations like the ATF. I don't think there was any FBI. There was like Social Security. I think there was a Secret Service contingent in there.
Right.
But I think the bulk of them were working on things like welfare stuff.
Childcare. There was a childcare centre as well, right?
Yeah, so...
Oh, so like socialism then?
Yeah, basically.
Yeah.
There was 19 children died in the daycare centre at the bottom of the building.
Because he parked it right outside the daycare drop-off
yeah.
site. That's a bit fucking rough, guy. Yeah.
He says he didn't know there was a daycare in there. There are some witnesses who say that he was spotted scoping it out.
Mm.
You would think that you would at least go in and have a look at what you were blowing up before you did it. He's always maintained that he has no regrets about anything.
Right.
I reckon you'd have to regret that. He did say if he'd known there was a daycare there, he would have thought about picking a different target.
Right.
Yeah.
And so that
just speaks to a regret straight away, right?
Yeah.
I wouldn't have done it if I'd known there was kids there.
Yeah, yeah.
It means you regret doing it because there was kids there.
I think he knew there were kids there and just did it anyway. But the bulk of the people who were killed in there were just people who were going in to talk to, like, someone at the social services. So just ordinary citizens.
Mm.
Yeah. It's like blowing up a Centrelink.
Yeah, basically.
Mm. It also has some Secret Service and ATF, but...
Yeah.
Well, no one from the ATF died.
What do you mean? Wasn't this whole thing targeted at them?
Well, so one of the reasons he says he picked the building is because there was the ATF and the DEA were both there. They wanted a building that had at least two out of three of ATF, DEA, FBI, people that were at Waco or Ruby Ridge. So that's where they landed on it.
Yeah, you might as well just blow up the local skinhead center with the amount of bloody moles they had in the skinhead groups that time. You could have got all three pretty easily. The local skinhead center, where skinheads hang out.
Should we talk about the conspiracy theories?
Yeah.
So the first...
Do you know what this podcast is about?
Oh, yeah, right.
It's not just history time with Cam, Luke and Salty.
So I guess the first conspiracy theory is that the ATF knew something was coming.
Mm.
They had foreknowledge, and that is why every ATF agent who worked at the Murray Building got a page that morning saying, don't come to work today.
What number is that on the pager?
See, that's the thing, right? Pages just send out numbers, right?
Mm.
There's no text. You don't get a text when you're doing a page in the 90s.
I think rudimentary, but not. You're not sending someone a complete message.
I don't know how they worked. I never saw one in my life.
Yeah, you just get a number.
Well, they weren't a thing here, were they? Pages
were a thing here.
Emergency people.
Yeah. I know from, like, maybe it was the Brady Bunch movie.
Okay.
Or something. They get a page saying 911. You know, it's an emergency. Maybe that was in Home Alone.
Yeah.
They get a page saying 911. It's an emergency. So call because it's an emergency, not...
Yeah. It's not a here's all the information you need right here.
Yeah.
See how I did that? Because I've seen people do it in movies and TV shows.
They look at the pager.
They look at it like that.
Yeah.
My question would be, if the ATF get a page saying don't come to work today, how often were they bunking off work that they had a preset number?
Yeah, yeah. It's 58008.
Hang on a second.
Yeah. Don't put that into your calculator.
So, the ATF...
Well, you can, but just don't flip it upside down.
No. They got their messages, their little 87 or whatever it would be.
And, yeah, there were no ATF agents there that morning, although maybe there were. So, later on, they said, actually, we did have two ATF guys in the building, and they were bloody heroes. One of them, you know, broke through walls with his martial arts skills.
Whoa.
One of them was in a free fall in a lift and helped people get out.
Well, they do say that came out later that there was no one in the lifts, right?
Yeah.
The lift company was like, nah.
Well, so yeah,
none of the lifts were in free fall. There was no one was in the lift.
I saw that on a video, like Stuff You Should Know or something video.
Right.
And the guy's like, you know, we checked with the lift companies and they had no record of any of that. I don't feel like they would have a record of that. Would they? Like, it's a bombing. You're not like...
But I guess
contacting the lift company and saying, hey, did you have an incident? Yeah, because we had a bomb incident because the building blew up, but we don't have specifics.
But I guess maybe the lift system would be able to tell them after the fact whether or not the lift was ever in free fall.
Yeah, maybe, yeah.
If the emergency brakes were on or off when they found the lift.
And also if they were off, like the story says, and they said, no, it didn't happen, of course they're going to say that. You don't want a lift company saying, oh, no, our safety failed.
Yeah. Our lifts just go constantly in free fall
all the time. Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
So, I don't know. I feel like it seems like a weird little sticking point that I can't get past.
I watched a movie the other night starring one Dwayne The Rock Johnson.
Love that guy.
Skyscraper.
Oh, yeah.
Have you seen it?
No.
Have you seen it?
No, I've seen the trailers, though. Is that where he...
It's a bloody great movie.
Is that where he has a prosthetic leg?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Who... That's the, exactly the sort of person you don't want in your bombing.
Yeah, no, no. But there's a scene in that where someone goes down an elevator and then pulls the emergency brake, like, to stop right near the ground.
Mm.
But the lift is in free fall for, like, literally, like, 1.5 kilometers or however big the building is. It's like, there's no way that person survived that at the last minute, just going, with the emergency brake.
They just jumped.
Yeah.
So... I watched a movie called A Noble Lie, Oklahoma City, 1995.
I had that bookmarked, but I never got around to watching it.
Where, so they talk a lot about the foreknowledge of the federal government about this stuff. So one of the examples they give is that, you know, the ATF weren't at work that day. But then another example they give is someone arriving at the Murrah building that morning and they saw two ATF agents with their ATF jackets on at the front. And they thought that was strange because those guys never wear ATF jackets.
Mm.
And then they're showing footage of ATF agents with their ATF jackets on. It's like, guys, where did you get this footage from?
Yeah.
If they never wear their jackets.
And
if they weren't there, why are they out the front?
Why? Oh, sorry. One of the things that I saw was there was people conducting bomb sweeps that morning as well. Did you guys come across that?
Yeah. So... there was apparently a bomb squad truck across the road because across the road from the Murrah building was a federal courthouse. So apparently there was a bomb squad truck there that morning. Now, when they were asked about it, they said, oh, no, we didn't do any bomb squad operations that morning. But there were a whole bunch of witnesses that saw the truck.
Mm.
Later on, they said, oh, there was a bomb squad truck there. It was just someone borrowing the truck. Someone was just running some errands and they needed a big truck.
Someone needed to move house that day.
Yeah. So they were just, you know, maybe it wasn't all above board.
Yeah. If you looked in the back, it just had a bunch of boxes and a credenza.
Yeah.
But that was their explanation. But they probably should have been looking for bombs because there were probably good reasons to suspect that something was going to happen because there'd been a lot of chatter.
Mm.
The other things pointing at foreknowledge that were in A Noble Lie were there was someone down at the scene and they spoke to like the senator or the congressman, whoever it was that had rocked down there.
Right.
And he said something like, oh, we knew this was going to happen. It's like, I'm sure he was talking in the general sense.
Yeah. Not the specific thing, just the fact that right-wing militants are getting stirred up.
Yeah, or they didn't even... Well, the thing is, they didn't even know it was right-wing militants at first. At first, they thought it was the Arabs.
Yeah.
And the initial description that went out was to look out for some Middle Eastern-looking blokes in a brown van, which no one actually knows what that's about.
Mm.
But that was not who they should have been looking for.
Mm. Well, one guy...
Easy to make everyone angry at the Arabs, though. Let's not say Arabs.
Do another go.
But yeah, no, like if you want to, if like at the time they're looking to stir up, you know, home fear about terrorists from overseas, that'd be the message to put out there.
Mm. But if the government is doing that, you would get some Arab blokes to do it.
To do it, yeah.
So they...
Maybe they couldn't find any. Come on, guy. No. We're peaceful Muslims.
Hollywood, which famously has these issues with representation.
Yeah.
It's the same in the false flag crisis actor community.
That guy's not an Arab. He's just a bloody...
He's Cliff Curtis from New Zealand.
Yeah.
Can't keep using him.
Doing another one, yeah.
He's
great.
They did arrest a Jordanian American who was traveling from Oklahoma City to Jordan that day.
Right.
So they did like a big dragnet because they were concerned that it was Middle Eastern terrorists. But he had no involvement.
Just a
bloke going home by the sounds of it.
So, the other reason that they might have had some foreknowledge is because, well, firstly, there were so many red flags. When they were building the bombs, because they were buying fertilizer from all over the place.
Mm.
And they also bought, like, nitro, like, racing fuel stuff. And one of the places they tried to buy nitro from was like, I don't know, some nitro supplier who got suspicious that they were buying way more nitro than any race car driver or motorcycle person would ever possibly need.
They went to like a big motorcycle meet, Mojito, and like, yeah, tried to like, hey, I need this. And at that particular meet, there was no bikes with that use that kind of a fuel, like a specific kind of fuel for whatever bikes. So they're like, well, that's a bit weird. Why would you come here and look for it if it's not what we do here?
They also break into some quarries and steal a whole bunch of like Semtex explosives and
stuff.
They didn't get caught for that.
No, but it would still be, surely someone would have reported that our mine
quarry
got broken into and a whole bunch of explosives
are missing.
Yeah.
You think that these days, if someone starts buying a whole lot of fertilizer, someone might notice. But when he went to buy the nitro...
Why is fertilizer so fucking explosive? I feel like it's at odds with what fertilizer should be doing. Anyway.
It's because of the stuff in it.
Yeah.
And you've got to mix...
I understand it's because of the stuff in it.
You've got to mix it with other stuff before it becomes explosive.
But like, you know what I mean? Like you put it on your garden to help things nice and...
Mm.
And also you put it in bombs to murder people. It's a weird juxtaposition. Anyway.
Well, it's
just don't fertilize your garden and then water it with like high-octane gasoline.
Yeah.
But after he tried to buy the nitro, the guy called the FBI and reported it.
Right.
But they didn't get followed up.
Classic red tape.
Yeah. Classic FBI.
But like, it would not have been hard to be like, all right, who was trying to buy way too much nitro? Who's not a race car driver? Oh, this guy who's at all the gun shows, who was at Waco.
Yeah.
Who's been hanging out at Elohim City with all the other white supremacist bank robbers.
Washed out of the military.
Yeah.
Mm.
Oh, fucking Noodles McVeigh.
Yeah.
Why are you washing me out of the ranger school? You're too fucking noodly.
McVeigh's getting roasted right now.
So one of the places that McVeigh had definitely been in contact with was Elohim City in Oklahoma, which was this sort of militia compound, which had had at least one informant who said that she'd seen people talking about plans to blow up federal buildings.
Right.
But those weren't followed up either.
Why are they not following up on all these massive red flags?
It does make you wonder how many they do follow up on. What are they saving us from if they don't have time to?
They're too busy bloody trying to drive Spooky Mulder out of the FBI.
Bogging him down with red tape.
Yeah.
Bogging themselves down in the process.
So... someone who possibly had foreknowledge was Snell, the guy who'd been involved in the previous plan to blow up the building. He told a guard 10 days before his execution on April 19, 1995, that he, in the next 10 days, you're going to see something big happen.
All right.
He also...
it's very easy thing to say though, right?
Yeah.
Something big's
going to happen.
Yeah.
Apparently, when he saw it on the news, there's different reports about how he responded, because he saw it on the news before he was executed. In some reports, he thought it was terrible. In other reports, he nodded his head and smiled knowingly.
Right.
He's like, yeah, but if only they'd used remote-controlled rocket launchers.
It is a weird thing, like, I don't think anyone was actually watching him. Like, he's in prison. So he's sitting there watching telly in prison. And someone's news, oh, I wonder how he's reacting to this. Oh, he smiled knowingly. Note that down and tell the cops later on.
He'd made comments along the lines that April 19 was a very significant date.
Mm-hmm.
And that they were going to regret executing him on that day.
Right. Okay, that's probably more.
There's sort of two ways to take that. Because April 19 was a bit of a significant date on the far right. It was the anniversary of Waco.
Mm-hmm.
It was also the anniversary of the first shots fired in the Revolutionary War, which was 220 years earlier.
Mm, right.
It was also 10 years previously, the Covenant of the Sword, the Arm and the Lord, or whatever they're called, their compound had been raided on April 19 as well.
Right.
3 days before my birthday.
Whoa.
Yeah.
All right.
Just remember that.
No, thanks, everyone. I refuse to.
Listeners, get your calendars out now.
Be too busy mourning Waco for 3 days. Be like, what was that? Oh, something happened after that. I can't remember what it was.
So you could take it as him saying, yes, something's going to happen on April 19, or you could say there are a bunch of significant dates.
Mm. Yeah.
The other thing is, though, Lewis Beam, did we talk about him during the Waco
episode?
Remember we talked
about... He was the Invisible Man?
No, he was the...
That was Mr. B.
Yeah, that was Mr. B.
Right.
Remember, we talked about the KKK guy who got into the press conferences with his little press hat?
Oh, yeah, mm. yeah.
That was Lewis Beam.
Right. I saw him on the doco I watched.
And Lewis Beam... is sort of famous for coming up with the idea of like leaderless resistance,
right?
Or that this was like a concept he popularized on the far right. He wrote like a manifesto about, you know, little cells all or little groups of people all acting towards the ultimate goal of overthrowing the government and, you know, supporting the white race. But you're not necessarily having to have these huge organizations of people that can then be brought down.
Blokes like that would shit their pants if they were given control. Like, you're not ready for that, buddy.
Well, he sent a message to the wife of Snell telling her that something was going to happen on April 19 and
right.
Said, oh, you know, they've got some kid who's going to do something.
Right. Who's they in this context?
They would be sort of people out at Elohim City, like the white supremacist groups, the militia groups.
Yeah, yeah.
So he reportedly, allegedly, politically knew that something was going to happen, that they'd gotten some kid to do something.
Mm.
Right, so they've sort of been... Did they claim responsibility after the fact?
No.
Right.
No. So the only person who claimed responsibility was Timothy McVeigh.
Yeah.
And that's after he was arrested.
Yeah.
And after, you know, a trial. Timothy McVeigh, so he heard that from a guy at Elohim City called Andy the German.
Mm-hmm.
Timothy McVeigh did call Andy the German 2 weeks before the attack, just after he'd booked the rider truck. His next phone call minutes later was to Elohim City, and we don't know what they talked about.
Mm.
But it was possibly to say, it's all good to go.
Yeah,
or possibly to arrange for him to hide out there after everything went down.
Hmm.
There's a lot of people hid out there. We talked in the Ruby Ridge episode about the Order, the white supremacist bank robbers.
Hmm.
That was somewhere that they sort of hung out. There was a few different like white power bank robber groups that would chill there.
Right.
And the people that ran it would just be like, oh, you know. It's all good in the hood.
Did they do bank robberies all wearing like rubbery masks of Hitler?
No, they did the ironic bank robberies wearing like
Point Break.
Yeah.
Got it. No, they wore like FBI. They'd give the names of like the FBI directors and things as their fake names, and they'd wear like Nixon and JFK masks.
Oh, there you go. Yeah.
Making a little point.
Yeah.
Making a little point while you do your bank robbery.
Yeah. A little point. Break.
Yeah, right. Interesting. Johnny Utah.
Yeah.
Point Break.
Yeah. Pappas.
Sorry.
Get me two.
Yeah.
So, a lot of people on that side of things seem to know about things. There were informants around, so that would suggest that it should have gotten back to the government. So maybe the reason there was like a lot of bomb squad activity is because they knew that something was going to happen around a federal building on that day.
Mm.
So people, like the families of victims say, you know, we should have been told that you thought something was going to happen.
Mm. So is this the first big event that happened where that become a common thread with conspiracy people that the government did it to push forward like legislation they wanted? Because they're saying that Clinton knew about it or organized it or just let it happen because he wanted to push this anti-terrorism legislation, right?
False flag.
Because there was the, was it Northwoods?
Yeah.
The Cuba thing from years ago that was supposed to be, they were going to kill all these innocent people to blame it on Cuba so they could go bash Cuba.
Yeah.
But this was this the first one where something actually happened where they've come and gone, the government did it because they wanted to take our guns?
I think it might be.
Yeah. That makes sense, yeah. Mm.
Because I guess Ruby Ridge and Waco were, the government are coming to take my guns.
Yeah.
I've got to protect myself. And this has kind of become
as a protest.
The government did this because they want to take all of our guns.
Mm. Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
And that sort of seems to have been what they've then gone on and said. 9/11, the government did it because they wanted to invade Iraq or Afghanistan or whatever.
Mm. Yeah, I think it's a fair assessment, yeah.
Because what triggered the first Gulf War? That wasn't anything similar, was it?
That was Saddam was trying to invade Kuwait.
That's right.
And they were like, nah.
Yeah. Not going to do it.
And they
Dana Carvey.
Okay. Wow. Dana Carvey reference.
Not going to do it.
So going back to the Clinton thing, this was again another example of Clinton being painted as a bad guy by the right wing sort of militia movement, where he orchestrated it personally and really wanted to use that to get his laws in.
I mean, the other thing that they had to do was, it was not a great look for the militia movement, but it was this right-wing homegrown terrorist thing. Because post-Waco, the militia movement had seen this huge increase. Post-Oklahoma, that really dropped off a cliff.
Yeah, right.
Like, they're still around. They continue to grow after, but just not at the same rate.
Because
it's not a great look to kill all those kiddies.
No. So,
plus they were Koresh's kids.
Well,
they weren't strangers' kids.
Yeah. Jeebus. Are we saying he was a patsy? Or is set up by someone?
Well, I think what the truth might be is that he was part of a wider conspiracy of people in the militia movement to do this. I don't think it was a government thing. It certainly seems like there was more people involved, though.
There's all sorts of witness reports and testimonies saying, like, oh, we saw these two guys with him or some two other guys.
Yeah, so one of the famous ones is John Doe number 2.
Mm.
So when they identified the rider truck from the bit of it that they found, and they traced it back to this truck rental company, and they went in there and they're like, oh, did you see anyone who hired this truck? Who was this Robert Kling guy? It's like, oh, yeah, it was this guy and his mate. There's two people in here hiring the truck. They're like, all right, so who's this second person? And they build a sketch based on the two people. And one of them is clearly Timothy McVeigh. Yes,
bang on for McVeigh.
Yeah,
it's all noodly and shit.
It's like, whoever the sketch drawer is, like, yeah, I fucking nailed that.
Yeah.
So you finally saw them side by side.
Yeah.
Nice.
And then the second guy, John Doe number 2, they've never identified.
Mm.
Or sort of, they claim they have. So it turned out there was a guy who came into the truck rental place the day before, who's a pretty fucking dead ringer for John Doe number 2.
Even his cap, right? He had a cap with these lines on it, and you see a photo of the dude with a like Panthers cap or something with these same lines on it.
So did the person just get confused? Is that the theory then?
I guess.
So
if you are, here's the thing, right? You always hear on TV shows and things with cops, they're like, where were you on the night of blah, 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 blah. It's like, if a cop asked me what I was doing 4 hours ago, I would probably not be able to tell you.
Mm. Not without a lawyer present, at least.
Well, no. But if you said to me, what did you do on October 1st this year?
Mm.
No idea.
If you're on a cop show, you'd be like, hey, I got to stack these boxes. Get out of here, I ain't seen nothing.
When you see people just like recalling what they were doing on days,
yeah,
like, I'd be useless. You know what? Even if I blew up a building on a specific date, I probably wouldn't even be able to remember what day I did it.
But I feel like you'd choose a day based on some sort of significance, so you'd have a
reminder. Well, that'd be the smart way to do it.
Mm. Yeah.
Mm. So the guy in the Panthers hat is a bit of a dead ringer for John Doe number 2. The fact remains that McVeigh was seen with another, or people say they saw him with another guy a bunch of times, not just there. People say they saw two people in the truck on the morning.
Right.
People say they, at one point, they go to like McVeigh's scene at a strip club in the week leading up. He's with some sort of olive skinned, dusky bloke.
Mm.
This is where they suspect their mates might, even though this is his body American, there might still be a Middle Eastern connection.
Mm. Oh,
please. there's apparently Terry Nichols had made a bunch of trips to the Philippines, where it's never been really clear about how he financed those.
Mm.
And it suggested that he met up with people from the Abu Sayyaf group, the Islamist terror organization.
Okay.
And so maybe they were behind the whole thing. But
I feel like those guys would claim it if they were, right?
Yeah. The thing about John Doe number 2 and the Panthers cap and stuff, right? So the guy says, nah, 100% there was two guys in there. And then they're like, oh, are you sure it wasn't just this guy from the day before? And he did come out and say, oh, yeah, maybe. But then I've seen other stuff where later on down the track, he's like, no, there was definitely two guys there.
Right.
And in a noble lie, one of the family members of the victim has like gone out to the truck rental place and spoken to him. And he's like, yeah, nah, there's... She said to him, can you tell me about when Timothy McVeigh came in? He's like, oh, do you want me to tell you about when Timothy McVeigh and his friend came in? So he's really sticking with it.
Yeah.
He's probably made a bunch of money off of a book or something where he's like, that's his narrative, and now he's just got to... That's it for life.
So there's a lot of stuff where the government didn't really look into it. The FBI doesn't look into this stuff when they're prosecuting McVeigh and Nichols.
Mm.
This is what I think might have actually happened, is that they got McVeigh on like some sort of shaky evidence, even though we know that he did it because he's eventually confessed. At the time, they're like, all right, so we've got this truck that goes back to this name, that sort of, we've got a picture of a guy that looks like him, and it goes back to this other house, which then is connected to this other place where then we found receipts for fertilizer there. But it's like, we don't have him on CCTV
right.
with the bomb or anything.
Yeah. Mm.
So we want to get this case sorted. So they didn't want to give the defense too many things where they could pick up, like, so who's this other guy? Who are these other people? Why is he calling the white supremacist compound where all the people that tried to blow up this building before hang out? They didn't want to bring all that stuff up. So they sort of leave it out and they don't really investigate it.
Mm.
I think that might be what happened. There's a guy who's convinced that his brother was murdered in jail because they thought he was John Doe number 2.
Okay.
So there's a few years later, this guy named Kenneth, I can't remember his surname, but he's in prison and he commits suicide in the dodgiest way, like trying to like cut his hands, and he cuts his head and then tries to hang himself, eventually dies.
Right.
And when they get the body back, they're like, are you fucking kidding us with this? This is a guy that's clearly just been beaten to death.
Was he the guy who Alex Jones interviewed his brother?
Yeah. The brother's like an attorney. Yeah. He's like picked up on this.
I watched a bit of that, then I was just like, I fucking can't watch.
It's weird because the brother's like trying to investigate just what has happened. And he gets like a phone call from someone saying, oh, the FBI murdered your brother because they thought he was someone else. And he's like, oh, that's a weird phone call to get. Doesn't follow up on that.
Well, this will have no impact on my life.
Yeah.
But eventually he comes to realize that his brother's sort of a dead ringer for this John Doe number 2 picture as well. Mm. So maybe after the fact, they were trying to do an investigation. The photo is also a bit of a dead ringer for one of the white supremacist bank robber guys.
Right.
Did someone else die in odd circumstances? Someone was shot in a field.
So there was a...
Who also looked like he tried to cut his wrists or something as well.
So there was one of the first responders.
Yeah.
Was a cop who went in there and... It seems like he had some misgivings about what he saw in there. Maybe it didn't all make sense. One of the confusing things when everyone went in is they found a bunch of bombs in the building, unexploded bombs, which turned out to be like ATF training stuff that had just like gotten mixed up in the rubble.
Yeah.
But they didn't know that at first. They're like, oh, fuck, more bombs. So I think that this cop had gotten it into his head that there was something else going on. Like, right. It wasn't just the truck. There were bombs planted in the building.
Which I think was reported in the media as well at the time.
They thought
there was extra, more bombs that people had to be concerned about.
Yeah. But it turned out that there was an explanation for them. Mm. But then again, the government's got a lot of explanations for things.
How many training bombs do they just have lying around enough to get blown apart?
Yeah.
Like, well, particularly in that building? Seems a bit weird.
So this cop was convinced that there was something more going on. apparently he went on about it a bit. I think he'd been told to shut up about it.
Right.
It's sort of characterized in these things as being like, shut up about it or else. I feel like maybe it was more like, can you shut up about this? You're not, this is not going to be good for your career to be the cop that always goes on about how the government did this.
Yeah.
Or that the story's not right, especially since we're trying to prosecute someone for it. Anyway, he said that the feds were following him. He told people that he knew he had evidence about something that was going on, but he had to hide it because the feds were following him.
Right.
I think it's entirely feasible that you could go through a super traumatic experience and have a mental break as well.
Mm-hmm.
Especially if it's fueled by you seeing stuff that didn't quite make sense.
Yeah. Well, that's the shooting in America, right? They reckon that guy was untreated PTSD.
Yeah. So he told people that he was going to hide some files and he drove off and they found his car by the side of the road and they found his body in a field nearby and he apparently tried to slit his wrists, then slit his own throat, and then after he'd done that, he'd crawled out into the field and shot himself in the head, which does seem like what you would do. I don't know, if you're going to murder someone, wouldn't you just murder them rather than making it look like a super botched murder?
Yeah, you don't have anything to gain if you're anonymously killing anyone by setting it up as their suicide.
Yeah, why would you make someone's suicide so elaborate? Like, that seems like something that would happen if you tried to kill yourself and then you failed and tried again and failed and then you're like, oh. One of the questions is like, why would you crawl out into the field? It's like, I guess if you've slit your wrist and your throat, you're maybe not thinking clearly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that is a little bit weird, though. There's a few... It's weird because a lot of the people that, who have first-hand experience of this stuff who are now, like, questioning what they saw, they're all cops and things, so they sort of has a bit of gravitas. But, you know, just because you're a cop doesn't mean you're not crazy.
No. Particularly in the US. A lot of different people connected, but no one's proved to be connected. So people have seen things, heard things... that he was involved with this or that, but really, there's no evidence of that. Is that fair to say?
Yeah. Should we take a little break?
Yes.
So, I guess that's the plausible conspiracy theory.
Yeah.
That there was a wider right-wing involvement. Not that the government was behind it to bring in gun control and anti-terror laws as much. I guess we're getting into some of the weirder things now. So, one of the theories is that McVeigh was actually never washed out of the army. That was all cover.
Right.
For him getting... They washed him out of Ranger school so they could put him into super secret black ops school.
That's how you do it.
Yeah, no one would ever suspect.
Yeah.
Old Noodles.
Yeah.
Noodles who washed out. Yeah, he's probably fucking...
He's probably some terrorist now.
Fucking crying in his boots somewhere.
I think that this is something he might have said to his sister at one point in a letter. I don't know if this was a bit of... Maybe a bit of fantasism.
Yeah.
But he mentioned that he was doing black ops. There's a lot of stuff online about like mind control, MKUltra, that sort of thing. Wouldn't put it bloody past them. Mind controlling people, sheep dipping.
Did you find anything plausible about that?
No.
Okay. I mean, like, what's the face? Unabomber was tied into.
MKUltra, like Kaczynski was actually part of like an MKUltra experiment.
Yeah. So like, you know, it's not out of the question if someone who's been in the army, and ends up, I don't know, moving in that world could. He's a little bit later though, wasn't he?
Robbo, bloody good point.
Thank you.
You know what? I discounted it. You know how I said no?
Yeah.
No, good point. Because with a lot of these guys, there's like Manson was at the hospital. Where they did stuff.
Yeah.
Mm.
And yeah, because, all right, fair enough.
Thank you.
Fair call.
Thank you.
I did see at the end of last year, a guy called Cody Snodgrass showed up online and on a lot of like right-wing conspiracy sort of podcasts and things, claiming that he had been a black ops operative who was offered $1 million to blow up the Murrah building.
Ooh. Whoa. I feel like they could... If you're a black ops operative, that's only a couple of years' wages, right?
Yeah.
Mm. Give me at least 10 mil.
Well, he was making... I heard one interview where he was making 20K a month. And that's whether he was doing a black op or not.
Yeah, right.
That's just retainer.
So if there's, no ops going on, he's just at home reading the paper, catching up on his stories.
Yeah.
20K a month.
20K a month.
Not a bad retainer.
Mm.
This was on like a... Do you know that old Damaganga? Do you know, if I say old Damaganga...
Old Dermager or something?
Yeah, old Dermager.
What is that? Why does that ring a bell? Is that one of PK's mates?
Maybe. That's one of these shows. He was on there talking about this. I saw him. Yeah, he was on a bunch of these things. Also found his YouTube... And also on these things, they've got like his face like that, or they've just got like a face, like a black silhouette of a face for him because he's so black ops. You can go to his YouTube channel where he's like this old hippie. And his YouTube channel is not about the time that he was a black ops guy. It's all about his experience with the Pleiadians.
Oh, yeah.
The aliens. And
I've seen this guy before.
And being a contactee since he was like 7 years old.
Yeah, right.
Did he sleep with some of them? Is that one of his stories?
Maybe.
I think he had a romantic... I'm pretty sure it's the guy I'm thinking of.
Is his middle name Tiberius? Star Trek original series.
Yeah.
But yeah, he...
I've got some Star Trek gear for the news show. Stay tuned.
Yeah.
All of these guys are like interviewing him. No one's like asking him about, oh, so when you were doing this Black Ops stuff, was that, were you still in contact with the aliens?
Yeah.
When you were doing that?
Yeah.
They're also credulous.
They just believe in anything that any rando comes on and says, if it sounds exciting.
And maybe they were trying to get him to do Black Ops against the aliens. He was like, no.
They're my friends. Misses. Yeah. Well, I need to bang them.
Yeah.
In one of his more recent videos, he gets a telepathic message from one of the aliens. He's no longer on Earth. He's left Earth to do other things.
Yeah, it's a big universe.
He sent a telepathic message and it's warning about how the government is going to use aliens as a false flag for an invasion.
That theory has popped up a lot recently.
Yeah.
And I guess I think we need to talk about space a little bit in future episodes because there is a theory that's been going on the internet of suddenly the whole star, or was it Space Force or whatever, they coincided with, you know, an object in the sky.
Yeah. Alien solar sail or whatever.
Yeah, yeah. And so people are saying they're going to use aliens as a false flag and then they're going to say we need to unite as a one world. Yeah, and then that's going to usher in the New World Order.
Mm.
I did like, though, that it was an alien saying... Now, careful, because they're going to use aliens and alien invasions. Yeah. It's like, hang on, didn't you come down and nick this bloke when he was like 7 years old? Anyway.
That's exactly what an alien that was going to do an attack would say.
Yeah.
They're going to blame us. It's not true.
Yeah, yeah.
Just so you know now.
So, MK Ultra or
Black Ops.
Anything else? What was his...
There's a lot of stuff about the explosion itself.
Okay.
So people, I think it's a bit like 9/11 where it doesn't make... The explosion doesn't seem like it makes sense with how it blew up.
Mm.
And it's sort of a similar issue to 9/11 where the explosion like weakened significant parts of the building.
Mm.
And then that caused progressive demolition where the weight of the upper buildings sort of came down on the lower ones. There are still people who are like, no, there's no way. It had to have been a bomb. There had to have been bombs planted as well to do this.
See, when I look at the site and I see there was a truck there and an explosion went out and then a third of this building's bitten out like it's been blown away, that makes total sense to me.
Wait, the official narrative or the...
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
It looks like a bomb went and demolished the front of this building.
Yeah.
I'm not a structural engineer.
Mm, well, you're talking like you
are. And I never claim to be one. But it looks... You know in Terminator 2, when like Arnie arrives, when that sphere goes,
yeah,
and then he's like naked,
yeah,
and then like where the sphere was, all the objects around him are like cut out in the shape of the sphere,
yeah.
That's what it makes me think of.
Yeah, okay.
The bomb went, and like where it went into an explosion dome,
yeah,
that's where the bit of the building's missing.
Yeah, that makes sense. It's called the Terminator 2 effect.
It's called the Judgment Day theory.
Yeah.
I read a thing in Nexus magazine which explained it all as being, firstly, if you think that it was an A-bomb, you're an idiot. It was clearly that they...
An atom bomb?
Yeah. Someone goes like, this is definitely like a little atom bomb.
Like, okay.
But this in Nexus magazine, they're like, it was not an atom bomb. Clearly, they sent an energy beam down, which caused an earthquake, which caused gases to quickly rise through, and then a second energy beam ignited the gases in the building.
If you're doing energy beams, you don't need to do an elaborate energy beam to ignite gases. You just shoot your energy beam at the thing.
Yeah. And disintegrate it.
Yeah. Don't bloody use it to get gases going.
That's not how their energy beams work, Robbo.
Looking at the curved chomp out of the building, it could have just been a big beam.
Oh, yeah.
Come down, chomped a bit out.
Yeah.
So one thing that...
Okay, you're calling it a chomp. Yeah. Something that a shark.
Truthers point to is like the seismic activity that's recorded at the time that the bomb went off.
It registered like 4.3 on the Richter scale or something?
Well, there's... Whatever it registered, there's like two significant spikes. And the official story is that one of them is the bomb going off and the second one is like the debris landing.
Mm.
Mm-hmm.
But you'd have to be a fool to believe that.
Okay.
Clearly, it's the earthquake caused by the beam, and then
then the gas is blowing up.
Yeah, or it's multiple bombs going off.
Mm.
4.3 is a small earthquake. Like, that seems about right to me for an explosion.
Mm.
Growing up in an earthquake world in New Zealand.
Yeah,
4.3 explosion.
Speaking of New Zealand.
Yeah.
On that episode of Hot Ones with Tenacious D.
Okay.
Have you seen it?
No.
Okay. You've seen it?
Yeah.
They talk about when they played in Christchurch.
And they got some busker or something?
And no, they played in Christchurch and the crowd, they got the crowd jumping up so much that it registered on one of the local earthquake monitoring things.
Yeah, right.
And people had a little bit of a panic.
Okay.
Because of the earthquakes.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's true.
I don't think anyone would panic over such a tiny
thing. It's a Manowar scale tall tale, I feel. Like, there was a giant blackout in the US years ago, and Manowar put out a press statement saying that their guitarist hit a particularly bitching power chord at that moment, which wiped out the power.
Yeah, no.
I think it is the guitarist that just got done with kiddie porn.
Okay.
So,
Jesus.
Fuck that guy.
Yeah. No, because, like, a small earthquake in Christchurch, no one would panic about that.
Right.
Because earthquakes are fucking dime a dozen at the moment.
Then. Yeah.
So, yeah, I think that's bullshit.
Yeah, right. Okay. 10 cents for 12.
10 cents for 12?
Dime a dozen?
Yeah. Mm. Maybe where you shop.
It's Australia, mate.
What else is there? In terms of foreknowledge, one of the weird things that I don't know if there's a... There probably is a very simple explanation for this. Like, the brother of the governor of Oklahoma had written a book before the bombing, which was about a group committing an attack on a federal building in Oklahoma.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And the villain of the piece was Tom McVeigh.
Right.
I don't know if that's... I've seen that published in a bunch of different places. I think it's something that really happened in that there was this book was written. I don't know, maybe he'd actually wrote it afterwards.
Right.
And just said that he'd written it beforehand, trying to get some sales or something.
It was the Foo Fighters.
Yeah, they were opening for Foo Fighters.
Yeah, and it was in Auckland.
Right.
So it was registered.
Okay.
But no one was really panicked by it.
Okay. Well, maybe I must have listened to their story wrong.
Yeah.
I was too busy waiting for them to just die of hot sauce.
Sorry to interrupt. It's, you know, a bit of a shooey, but...
Got to check these facts, mate.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We don't want hate mail.
There's no fake news on the Hypothetical Institute.
Definitely.
There's no at nuss.
Not at all. At us with nice things.
Yeah.
So where do you, like, where do you land on it, Cam? What do you think happened? Do you think other people were involved?
I feel like other people were involved. There's a book called Others In, I think it's called Others Involved.
Okay.
Which is by McVeigh's first defense attorney.
Okay.
And it's basically is about the defense that he couldn't run in the trial.
Right.
And he's like, look, I couldn't say anything because McVeigh wanted to do this or that. But he told me that there was more people involved.
That's not good lawyering, I don't think. Is it?
Oh, you got to do what your client tells you. And yeah. He couldn't say anything until after, like, McVeigh had waived, like, attorney-client privilege.
Yeah, right.
But and he cashed in with a fucking book.
Basically, his point was that, yeah, there were... McVeigh told me there were other people were involved and that he was sort of covering for them.
Mm.
Which I think is, like, where, like, Nichols getting a lighter sentence because he was under duress, apparently, when he was putting the bomb together.
Mm.
And, like, Michael Fortier was, like, not as involved as he was. And a bunch of people are getting away scot-free.
Mm.
Because unless you look a bit like one of, like a pitcher.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm. Yeah, I reckon there were probably other people involved.
Yeah.
But McVeigh, like, I think basically on his, just before he died, he said, like, what's scarier that there's a bunch of people out there who haven't been caught for this or that one person could do this. And the truth is, and he's like, this is the truth. You can't handle the truth. It's like, fuck off, Timothy McVeigh, with you can't handle the truth nonsense. He's like, the truth you can't handle is that one person could do this.
Yeah. I mean, it's not exactly a complex plot.
It's not, but like, I guess the official narrative, there's like holes in it. There's things that they could never put together. And part of it is because in a pre all pervasive surveillance state, like that, they didn't have that then. You can't track everyone everywhere. People don't have mobile phones that you can ping where they are at all times.
We're not recording everyone's phone calls.
They put together a narrative of where they went and what they did, but you've got all of these things where it's like, all right, well, in our narrative, some of the people, some of the witnesses are saying there was another guy here. When they went out to a lake to build the bomb, they say they built it like in a day. They just spent a day doing a little bomb build by the lake. But there are witnesses who say the truck was out there for like 3 days. And it was a really, it was quite an elaborate bomb that they put together. But it's like, so if they were out there for those 3 days, then the other bits of the story don't quite gel.
Yeah, yeah.
You've got, we know that he made these phone calls, but you don't know what they talked about. You've got these people who say, I was out at Elohim City and they were talking about the federal buildings are going to blow up. And then those people are fucking crazy as well.
Yeah, yeah. They were out at the skinhead hangout.
Yeah.
Like,
one of this informant that they had out there, she got involved in, like, the white power movement because she rang up a hotline called Dial a Racist.
Okay.
That was her first introduction to the white power movement. I think she'd seen some sort of crime committed by African Americans. I don't know where they're advertising the Dial a Racist hotline.
I was going to say, is that late night TV or is it like the back of a skeevy magazine?
We've got racists waiting to take your call.
Maybe it's like a gun magazine, Dial a Racist. I can see it getting a run in one of those.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, yeah, I don't know. But you've also got these people saying, it's all going to happen on the day, this day.
One of the interesting things that I want to pick up that you just said, Cam, about, you know, back then we didn't have all the surveillance, so we don't know. It sounds weirdly like you're pro big government surveillance.
I'm not pro that.
Okay, it just sounded like you were.
I'm just regretting
the fact that they didn't have it then and it would have helped. Because it would have helped, so.
Well, I mean, as we saw in Melbourne this week, it doesn't help. You can have people 100% on the radar, and if they keep their thoughts to themselves, you never know what's going on inside anyone's head.
Or bloody JFK. He was on their radar massively, and he didn't do anything about it.
Yeah, because they knew.
Yeah.
Then who would have known? JFK's head just explodes out of nowhere.
Yeah.
That's my running theory still.
Okay.
I don't believe there was a mind control or anything.
Mm.
You just think white supremacist plot.
Yeah. And it doesn't even have... The plot doesn't have to be that big.
Yeah.
And it could just be that more people knew about it, or that there were more people, you know, helping... Yeah.
Bit more support than just his mate who bailed early and his other mate who bailed a bit later.
Yeah. There doesn't have to be that much more support. It's still terrifying that one person can do that.
Yeah.
I don't know.
There you go. Anything else to add about bloody...
Not from me.
No.
No, neither.
I feel like at some point we probably should have mentioned the Turner Diaries.
Oh, yeah. I didn't read about those. Remind me.
Well, the Turner Diaries was a book by, I think, William Pierce, the Nazi leader. He published it under a different name, but essentially it's like a story about this guy, Turner, Earl Turner, who engages in the sort of leaderless resistance things that they talk about, that, you know, Beam came up with. And it's a story about the overthrow of the government and, you know, the white race rising up.
Mm.
And they kill all the blacks and all the Jews and the journalists and everyone.
Mm.
And it was, the thing about the book was, it was a huge inspiration to McVeigh. And there's like bits of the book where it's like basically bomb making instructions.
Yeah, it's sort of story / guidebook.
Yeah.
How to
do this.
Yeah. Overthrowing the government for dummies.
It's interesting. I think I've heard the Turner Diaries mentioned before. And I think in my mind, they had something to do with Ted Turner, the
media magnate.
Yeah. And like, I don't know, I just figured it was like his biography or something.
Right.
And then I'm like, wait, it's not at all. Should have probably paid more attention every time it came up.
Just his diaries.
Yeah.
No, but it was something McVeigh became obsessed with. And it was one of the things he was selling at gun shows, was okay. The Turner Diaries.
Mm.
I bet you can buy some cooked things at gun shows.
Yeah.
Well, that's the thing. Like, I guess this is pre-internet.
Mm.
So if you went to a gun show, it wasn't just guns. It was all of this white supremacist Nazi stuff as well happening. Mm. Maybe someone should have been... Maybe, you know, when they're going to all of these Nazi things with their snitches,
yeah,
pop along to a gun show.
Yeah.
Plus, all these feds love guns anyway.
Yeah.
So you could see what the new scope is.
Yeah.
And you'd also be like, oh... That guy's selling a bunch of books about how to do a terror attack.
Yeah.
Why don't we just make a note?
Yeah. I'd be curious to know how closely they watch all the gun shows.
Yeah.
I mean, some cops are also the ones that burn crosses.
Yeah. Thanks, Robbo.
Yeah. A little Rage Against the Machine there for you. Yeah.
So, yeah, that's the Oklahoma City bombing.
Yeah, right.
There's still a huge truth movement, though.
Mm.
Mm.
But I think there's a part of the reason for that is that there's huge holes in the story.
Yeah. All right. We'll wrap this baby up then.
Yeah.
Yeah. Where can people find us on the internet, Robbo?
HypotheticalInstitute.com, cookedunits.com for our merch.
We should get some new merch up.
Yeah.
This week. No, what day is it today? Sunday?
Yep.
Monday, tomorrow. Yeah, this week I'll get something happening merch-wise, a new t-shirt or something.
Cool. At Hypothepod on Twitter, Hypothetical Institute on Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
Punch us into Google. Give us a like in iTunes. Give us a bloody rating in iTunes or whatever it is called.
Yeah. Can you give ratings and reviews on the Google Podcast thing?
If you can. If you use it, do it. Yeah. You can on Spotify.
Yeah.
But subscribe, and I'm assuming that'll help an algorithm somewhere.
Yeah.
Salty, where can people find you?
At Saltmarsh on Twitter and Instagram for my artwork. Andrew Saltmarsh Illustration for artwork on Facebook. Check out Tohider on Patreon.
Okay. You can find me at Sexenheimer on Twitter. Gather around me on Facebook and iTunes for my other podcast. Did just finally put out that episode I mentioned last week.
Current.
Yeah, it's very current.
You can get me at Ale of a Time, aleofatime.com, and Keg Bottle Can and all good bookshops. And later this month, I'll be in Brisbane talking about beer. So if you're in Brisbane, check out the Stoner Wood Invitational.
And if you want to learn a bit more about Robbo, tune in to the Andy Social podcast.
Yeah.
It's just been on the most recent episode.
Yeah, some insight into my life.
Yeah.
You hear the doorbell ring?
Oh, yeah. Which we always cut out of our podcast.
Yeah.
Is it a ghost ring?
No, it's someone checking the fire alarm.
Oh, there you go.
Tune in to Andy Social to find out what happens next.
See ya.
Don't worry. Except not only did Bush do 9/11, but he also keeps the planes